The Beatles and Help, and no point asking XTC or Sergeant Rock to help you. He's no use. But somebody who is of use is Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing. Lovely to see you again, Gavin.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me back.
Right, you got your water well away from Sarah this morning, haven't you?
Well away from her. She soaked me rotten last time.
She did, yes.
And you know, I think it was deliberate.
It wasn't even the summer either, was it? So it took ages to dry off. Now, actually, before let's just get started. This is a general discussion about COVID-19 and well-being. But you've had it.
I have indeed.
Gosh.
Yeah, back in March.
Ooh. What was it like?
I think I have an immense amount of gratitude, because compared to lots of people, it could have been a lot worse. So I had for about 10 days, I had high fever. I was okay when I was taking the paracetamol. When those wore off, then I had the shakes and it wasn't pleasant, but compared to other people, I think I'm one of the lucky ones.
And you have to be careful about the paracetamol as well, because if you take too much, it can damage your kidneys. So you can only take it once every 6 hours for four times a day, can't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. So you have antibodies.
I have antibodies. Apparently I have strong antibodies. So, but you know, the thing with the antibodies is that they can't tell you how long the antibodies last for. So it's good that you have the antibodies. And then you ask, well, what does that mean? Do they last for 6 months, 12 months? That bit we don't really know.
Mm. Well, I think we'll leave the medical side of COVID-19 out. It's the emotional side that you really want to talk about. And it's been an incredibly stressful time for everybody, mm-hmm. some people more than others, obviously.
Very much so. And I think that it's interesting. We've all kind of gone through the same experience, and yet how we've experienced it has been so different. And the way that individuals, whether we're single, whether we're in relationships, but I think the thing we can say overall is an immense period of anxiety, and it's not over.
Yeah. Well, I was lucky enough to be able to carry on working throughout the crisis. And actually, the 2 weeks I had to take off, because I had to take 2 weeks holiday during the lockdown, that was the worst part of it for me, because I couldn't do anything. But Sarah, you were stuck indoors for a month, weren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I was working from home. I didn't have a holiday like some people, I was working from home.
Okay, so some kind of couples counselling here, maybe, that just...
I think you were ready to climb the walls by the end of that month, weren't you?
Yeah, the 2 weeks working from home was definitely a bit of a challenge.
Yes, yeah. The confinement, I think, you know, being in close proximity to your loved ones, even though you love them, but you're used to sort of one of them being out while you're at work, or the other way around, aren't you? So
I think that was one of the biggest stressors for all of us is... You know, even if you're in an apartment or a house, it's the fact that actually, no, the kitchen's, that's my office. You can't make lunch now because I've got a big conference call. Or, you know, the dining room is no longer a dining room because the work papers are all over it. And so, and however strong our relationship might be, you know, the one vow we didn't take was, you know, I will love you till death do us part, but not to be stuck in the same room for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So even the best of relationships have been tested in lockdown.
Well, so some people, of course, lucky to have a garden, myself included. But I mean, there are lots of people who not only didn't have a garden, but didn't have a terrace, and they were just stuck inside an apartment, as you say, within four walls.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of people have been furloughed or they've lost their jobs completely, and so money comes into it in a big way, doesn't it?
Money has really been a significant factor in terms of coming into the therapy room. I mean, money generally is the thing that we worry most about. Huge amounts of research that shows it's our number one stress. And the thing that adds to that stress is, like any scarce resource, the moment something, we're aware of the fact that it's scarce, then there is this fear that it's going to run out. What will happen if my money runs out? And so so lots of people have been bringing their money fears, and a money fear, it's not rational. So it's got nothing to do with how much money I earn. It's to do with my relationship with money. What did I learn about money growing up? So I've got some clients who are, you know, objectively very well off. They're going to have a roof over their head. They're going to be able to pay the school fees, and yet they can't sleep at night because there's this primal fear. You know, if you think about the scarce resource when lockdown first started. So hands up, I was one of the idiots that was in the supermarket buying all the toilet roll. Why? I've no idea. there was just this sense that this is a scarce resource and we better buy it. Now, times that by infinity, that's what the stress over money is like. So I've spent a lot of time coaching and working with individuals and couples about how do you manage this this money anxiety?
Well, if you've got enough, what is the advice? Just stop worrying, you know. You've got to... It's easier said than done, isn't it?
It is easier said than done. And firstly, talking about money is really difficult because there's two emotions that go with money. One is fear and one is shame. So what that means is I'm probably much happier talking to you about my sex life than about my bank account because there is just so much shame over it. So people don't want to consciously bring it to therapy. When you finally do get there, the work is actually helping someone understand, okay, where does this come from? So this belief that you have to earn money to be successful, this belief that money will make you happy, because all the research shows that once you get up to about 50,000 euros above that amount, it doesn't actually correlate to our happiness. So we kind of all know that objectively. So it's actually helping someone understand this narrative, this story that you've told yourself about money. Where's this come from? Because it's driving so many of your self-destructive behaviours.
Well, Sarah's all right. She's rolling in it. So.
But it's a cross between... It can be destructive, but you do need money. So isn't it not that fine line between finding the well-being and the right amount of money to be well with, if you like? It's because, you know, like you, I agree. I'd like to say, no, you don't. You could live off love and water.
Cut your cloth accordingly, my father always used to say.
But you can't. So surely having that little bit of money that just makes life, does have aspect, makes life a little bit easier.
Absolutely. And so there's nothing wrong in wanting to be ambitious and saying, actually, I've done a budget and in order to have the lifestyle that I enjoy, these are my expenses and this is my income. But when you actually dig deeper, for so many of us, actually, it's driving our behaviours in a way that's quite destructive. It's way above... this is how much I need to survive, and it's deeply unconscious. So sometimes when I do intensives with individuals and couples, and we spend a day or two really going very deep in terms of their money relationship. So if I said to you, let's do it with both of you. So I say to, let's start, Rob, money is the root of all evil, true or false?
True.
True. Sarah?
True. Well, I thought it for a long time, but I'm changing my mind.
Okay.
No, it is true. It's true.
So after watching Inside Monaco.
Yes.
Money, I'll just give you three or four. Money buys freedom.
True.
True.
That was not a very confident true. True.
Well, depends what your idea of freedom is, I guess.
Well, being to do exactly what you want.
Yes,
when
you want. Yeah, but sometimes you want to do the things because you've got the money, but they're not the things that make you happy.
No.
I'll say true. Go on.
I give you a more difficult one. True or false, I deserve money.
No, that's not true.
It is difficult. That's a difficult one, isn't it? I deserve money. Well, given that you're in paid employment, I suppose you are entitled to some remuneration, so I would say yes.
See, that one, whenever I do that, and I've been doing some seminars recently, and I do a little quick poll, it's usually 50-50. It's really hard for us to say, I deserve money. And then when you start to dig a little bit deeper and you ask someone, well, what's that about? Because for some of us, money is such a motivator. But sometimes we also grew up thinking that, you know, when I said to people I'm coming to live in Monaco, oh, that's just vulgar. Money is just, it's awful. You know, let's not talk about the BBC documentary and all that side. But where does that come from, that money's vulgar? Or, no, I need money. So to actually say to ourselves, I deserve money, It's a deeply unconscious belief. I'll give you one more. True or false, Rob, you can't trust people around money.
You can't trust people around money? No, I'd say that's false.
How much will you lend me?
Sorry?
How much will you lend me?
Well, what have you got as collateral? No, I mean, I'll just keep going back to this Inside Monaco programme. There's a very good statement, but I can't remember who said it. Monaco's not about money. They're either good people with money or bad people with money.
Yeah.
So it's nothing to do with the money. It's just what kind of a person you are in the first place.
Mm. Yeah. And Sarah, you can trust people around money?
Yes. Why not? Why wouldn't you? I said it was false, like Rob. No, I wouldn't. Yeah, I can trust people around money.
Right, so if you... I think Gavin wants a loan, you know.
I'd do that.
Okay.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Because one of the issues that I deal with a lot, and it comes up with couples, is financial infidelity. where very often, and I think it's something like about 60% of the American population when they were surveyed, I think that stat's right, basically one of the spouses has a secret bank account that their partner doesn't know about.
Oh, really?
And again, yeah.
Wow.
Secret savings, secret credit card. And once we start having those kind of secrets and then it comes out, then, well, what else can't I trust my partner about?
But having joint bank accounts can also be a recipe for disaster, can't it?
It can. But, the true or false is it's just, I mean, I just, picked some fun ones. But when you actually dig sort of deeper and you understand the extent to which money drives us, either the need to accumulate it or the need to give it away, because we also can be money avoidant.
But it's relative as well, just say, for example, you're on the breadline, you're earning minimum wage and you lose your job and you don't know how you're going to feed your family next week.
Correct.
But you might also be earning quite a lot of money, have just taken on a big mortgage and lost your job and thinking, my God, how am I going to pay the mortgage?
Absolutely. And the reality is, sadly or otherwise, but a lot of the people that I meet in my work and the experts I'm working with, they don't actually have financial problems. It's the fear of what if, which feeds back to how we started this today, which is just this anxiety. I actually call it's anticipatory grief. It's this sense, it's this eerie feeling that we're afraid that something bad is going to happen. We just don't know what or when. And we're all living with this anticipatory anxiety and grief.
Does that not come from not living in the present?
Absolutely.
Or constantly living either in the future or the past, maybe what you had and you haven't got now, or what you want in the future and not actually just living for now.
Correct. And that's part of what, we sort of know it intellectually, and then we watch the news and those, it's not rational. And therefore we start to get into the catastrophic thinking or the negative thinking of what if. And there is a huge amount of loss around. We are grieving a loss of a lifestyle, and we are, everyday life is just, it's not predictable in the way it once was. So I think all of us, myself included, just, I don't feel in control in the way I did this time, say last year.
Do you think that's why some people just seem determined to accumulate more and more money? Is it a fear of not having enough that they'll run out one day? That, you would think if you've got a couple of million in the bank, you'd be reasonably happy and think you could have the freedom to do pretty much what you wanted. But, we see, mentioning their names, some people just want more and more and more. I suppose it's not their fault that they've got a company that's earning lots of money and it keeps ending up in their bank account.
So that person's money belief, that money script, that money story is money's going to buy me happiness. Or maybe they learnt growing up that I need to provide for my family. That's my role. And again, what usually comes out of the money intensives is, and I have to say, it's more men than women who have this kind of obsession with money or workaholics. And that's the person who... very often would have got 3 A's at A level, and the parents said, yeah, but well done, but why didn't you get 3 A stars? So I usually say to them, it's great that you're very successful and you're doing this, but you think the next deal is going to make you any happier? Or will it be the one after that? Or is it the one after that? Because there is a very early childhood wound that you are wanting to solve here, and the money and the deal and the car is not going to do it.
Do you ever listen to the podcast of Martin Lewis, the money-saving expert?
No, I know. I've read some of his work. I haven't listened to podcasts.
I was reading an article by him the other day, and he was saying the average person in the UK has savings of £1,900, which isn't going to go very far.
Yeah.
And they say you should have 3 months' salary behind you to cope with an emergency such as losing your job. But is it helpful to think relatively, I might be in a bit of trouble, but I've got 50,000, and just think about those people who've got a lot less?
Yes. The first part, absolutely. The second part, yes, it's always good to be grateful and to have gratitude. But usually just the negative thoughts then run away with us. So what I usually say to someone, and I'm not a financial advisor, I'm coming into it from the point of view of the psychology of it. But I will usually say to someone, the thing to focus on if you really are worried about money is focus on the here and now. So don't look beyond the next 6 months, because we haven't got visibility beyond the next 6 weeks. But financially, have a look at what's happening now in your life and see what debts you need to pay right now, and don't look beyond that. But just generally, I don't think we've ever in the West had more debt and fewer savings than ever before, even though intellectually we all know that's not a very smart way to run our lives.
Yeah, and this could be going on for a decade.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break for the news in a minute, but first of all, got an email from an anonymous lady. To be honest, I couldn't stand my husband during the lockdown. I'm not used to having him in my space all the time. Do we need couple counselling?
Well, I think it probably goes... I mean, I don't know whether you need couples counselling. I think it depends on what the relationship was like before. Because as I said, even the best relationship we have struggled with having to live with one person in the same space for a long period of time. But I think that what I would say to that person is you need to, each of you, create your own spaces. What we think we need to do, if heaven forbid, but it is likely we go back into lockdown, what we've learned is that we need to be able to communicate with our partners more. I'm feeling anxious today. I'm feeling stressed. I'm feeling overwhelmed. What do you need, honey? I think I just need some space. Can you give me the dining room until 2 o'clock? Or and it is interesting because there are certain couples who were struggling and they went into lockdown, and it's kind of been a bit of a make or break for those couples. And a lot of them actually have made it. I mean, there's something at least hopeful that a lot of those couples have actually found each other again. So I'd say keep working at it. If the stuff you're coming up against is insurmountable, possibly.
Well, it's got a lot of questions when you come in, Gavin. Janet would like to know, I have a friend who relies entirely on her husband for money and she feels trapped. How can I help her?
Well, that falls under the category of financial abuse. And that can be quite serious, because with financial abuse often comes emotional abuse. And when money gets weaponized and money is used in a way to control someone in that coercive way, there's warning signs there. So, and I think there's a difference between one person being a breadwinner, but it sounds like from what you just read, if someone is feeling trapped, and it is often the female in the relationship, I would seek some advice, talk to a friend, because there's potentially something else going on there.
Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeings with us this morning. More after the news. It's 9:30. Okay, still on the money subject. Carla says, my husband is reckless with spending money and I want to save more for the children. It's causing us a lot of stress. Any advice would be greatly appreciated.
I would say that's probably the most common couple money problem. And that is in most of our relationships, there one of us is more likely to be lean towards being more of a spender, and one is more of a saver.
Nice shoes, Sarah.
And that is
can't
often,
take it with you, can you? That's my motto.
You can take
that's
your
often
shoes with
what brings it. I can't even see. Oh, they have my shoes.
Can arrange from put your shoes in the coffin with you if you want.
So, back to the point.
Sorry.
So, but one person is usually more of a spender, and one person's more of a saver. And actually, what that requires is, again, two different people looking at what's that about? Why is someone seeing money as, again, classic scenarios. I worked with a couple and they'd inherited some money. He wanted to buy a nice sports car because that's what granny would have wanted. And she saw that, but that's for the kids' education. Why on earth would you do that? And we had to kind of work through why one of them believed that money had to be saved and put aside, and why the other one wanted the flash car.
Hmm. We've got about 15 minutes left, so any further questions, Studio Riviera Radio @NC.
I've got one from Scott.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Well,
right, Scott,
it's not really a question. He's just talking about going back more down to the lockdown, the effect it had on people's emotions and anxieties. He says, on a positive note, Emily and I had a grand time in the lockdown. We really had time to spend together, no work, no stress, just being together. Is it not just being greedy, working to live and not live to work?
Firstly, it's great to hear that he really enjoyed the lockdown. And I think those of us who have come out best out of the lockdown, assuming that we haven't had a sick relative, and but put that to one side, the people who have come out best are the people who have seen the lockdown more like a kind of spiritual retreat. This is an opportunity to connect with my loved ones, with nature, and to take joy. I think your point earlier, Sarah, about just being in the present moment. And it's really hard to do, but when we manage to master it, it's wonderful. And I think then the last part there about is it greedy?
Just being greedy, and is it not surely work to live and not live to work?
It's again, this is about what our values are. And, you know, I think there's nothing wrong in being ambitious. Before I was a therapist, I worked in the city and I was on that kind of corporate treadmill. And I decided I don't want to do this. I don't want to, you know, I want to have a different lifestyle. My values have changed. So it sounds like he's got a set of values, which is about his wife, his family, and enjoying that time. But I think sometimes people are coming to therapy because on some kind of existential level, they know that this isn't quite right. Something here isn't quite right.
Now, you said you'd had enough of the city and you wanted to change your lifestyle, but what if your partner thinks that's a really bad idea and doesn't want you to do it?
Again, you know, very common. And so that's something that will take you potentially to couples counselling and understanding for both of you. What's driving this? You know, and I do sometimes say to couples, there are some problems that, it's not worth coming to couples counselling for. You know, if a couple pitches up and one person says, hey, I want to raise my kid as Jewish, and the other one says, I want them to be Muslim. And they both look at me and I was like, well, there's not a lot I can do about
that. It's not going to work.
So, you know, I can explore it with you in one or two sessions, but really this, you know, there are certain things that are deal breakers. So every couple has to work out, you know, is this change of career? Is this living in a different location? Is this a deal breaker? Or do we actually want to work this through?
Right, because I'm just saying, you know, you might have worked all out yourself and think, right, I'm going to change my lifestyle. I'm going to go and start an Airbnb somewhere or go and live in the middle of the country. I've worked out the finances. It's going to be tough to start with, but we can get it done. And the other one still might not agree when you've explained it all in black and white.
Absolutely. And that's why I say money is always a couple's issue. So, and the thing that we tend not to do is talk about, because go back to what I said earlier on about the fear and the shame. So even in our relationships, there's a little bit of shame of saying, you know, how would you feel if we didn't earn X or Y? Couples need to talk about money. And what we don't do when we start dating and we're looking into our loved one's eyes and we're in that Eros phase and everything is just wonderful and there's all the wonderful emotional and physical stuff happening, we don't tend to say, you know, what do you think about retirement? How much money have you got in your bank account? So we never deal with the money issues at the time we should. But I will say to couples, once you've worked out this is an issue, you need to start having some money dates. And you need to sit down together and talk about, for both of you, what's your, you know, the last part of my financial intensive is the money vision. What do you both vision for your life? And what do you need for that to happen?
I'd like to talk about some people with underlying health conditions who either may be on their own or living as part of a couple, possibly getting on in years. I mean, that's been very, very tough. I mean, a lot of people I've been reading about just don't dare go out at all.
Those are the people, I think, people with underlying health conditions who I have just been, who have been absolutely the hardest hit. And so, and that's why when you said to me, what was it like having the virus? I'm like, well, you know what? It was a breeze because I'm living here. I'm in a relationship. I have a support network. So those are the people that really, and for the elderly, it's all very well saying, oh, there's lots of support and you know, go on Zoom. But, you know, a lot of the elderly don't know what that means. And so, and it's why I started during the height of the crisis, I started in the south of France, a free weekly support group. So people could come online. But I urge anyone listening who is on their own to you know, pick up the phone, do Zoom. That lack of social interaction. You know, when we look back at this time, I think we'll look now about the anxiety and say that was bad, and then we'll look 2, 3, 4, 5 years ahead, and that's where we're going to see all of the emotional PTSD and all of the kind of the symptoms. So. You're absolutely right in identifying that population.
And not just elderly people. It could be somebody who's had an organ transplant, somebody who's recovering from chemotherapy. And even though governments have lifted restrictions or are easing them, they just still don't dare go out. And the message is coming through is don't listen to the government, listen to what your doctor says.
And you're right. So for those people, and that's the anticipatory anxiety. And I know people like this who are now frightened. It's all very well saying, well, it's official. Hey, you can go out. Two households can meet. But if I've got an underlying health condition, I'm not sure I want to do that. And then we get into all these kind of really interesting kind of boundary issues, where we have a set of friends who say, hey, come on, let's go out now, it's fine. And what if I don't want to? What if I don't feel comfortable? How prepared am I to say, I would love to see you, but the idea of going to your barbecue with 100 other people, I'm just not there yet. So thanks for the invitation, but no.
Gavin, what do you say to people? I mean, people got up to all sorts of things in the lockdown.
Speak for yourself,
matron. I actually read a lot of books. I also started on this mad DIY phase. Right? It started off with a piece of skirting that needed replacing for years. And my wife had been nagging me and said, when are you going to mend that? When are you going to... And I said, right, I'm going to do it. So mm-hmm. I did it. And then since then, I practically repainted the whole house and done all sorts of other stuff as well. I mean, it's getting a bit obsessive compulsive, to be quite honest with you. But some people did absolutely nothing. Should they be feeling guilty about it?
Well, firstly, if you have some time, I'd love you to help do some DIY work at home.
Because we got
dodgy skirting and stuff.
You can do anything after looking at a YouTube tutorial.
Not with my dexterity skills.
That's what I used to say.
What about me?
No. About I was two left hands for DIY, but after looking at a few videos, I got the hang of it.
Oh, I'm very impressed. To your question, I think that part of the anxiety caused when lockdown started, I think we all had these lofty ambitions of all the things that we would do with the free time. And then as time went on, I think there became this anxiety and disappointment of I didn't write my book, I didn't learn a new language. And what made it even worse is on social media, I don't know if you saw these things, but every now and then there was this family that learned the whole song set from Les Miserables and they produced it in their front room. And I'm watching these things feeling so inadequate because for some of us, the fact that we got out of bed and showered and moved from one room to the other is an accomplishment. So I would say that it's probably one of those rare times when we just need to be kind to ourselves. And if the stuff that you can do, like you said, and DIY, and it's been stimulating, that's great. But we really need to cut ourselves a break, that when we've got all of this, as I was saying earlier on, this anticipatory anxiety, and we're worried about loved ones, you know what? I am not going to be at my most creative and at my most productive, and maybe that's okay.
I think a lot of people found themselves doing things that they wouldn't even normally dream of doing, though, wouldn't?
Absolutely. And so some people did, as you said, in terms of the DIY, but a large number of people were coming to therapy saying, albeit coming online, and saying, actually, I'm just disappointed. I should have done more. I've been procrastinating a lot. And we just have to remember what we're living through. And sometimes, sometimes I say to a client, if I spoke to you the way you're talking to yourself, you would not come back to therapy. So can you hear that inner critic? These are unprecedented, or certainly in recent times, unprecedented. And if that's what happened in lockdown, let it go.
I think the other thing that's really on people's minds is that this has not gone away, as we mentioned earlier. I mean, getting reports every day of spikes in cases, particularly in the States and South America. But Germany's had another outbreak, so has China, Spain. There are pockets of spikes there as well. This is going to be around for a long, long time. And it's just, how do you deal with that emotionally going forward?
Sarah and I were just chatting about this before. It's about being able to stay with the present. I have to be able to get in touch with my grief and with my feelings. Usually when we go through a tragedy, whether it's a man-made disaster or it's a natural disaster, relatively soon afterwards, we can make some meaning out of the suffering. And that's what, there's an Austrian psychologist called Viktor Frankl. He was a Holocaust survivor. And he basically said that he wrote this wonderful book, Man's Search for Meaning. And what he learned from being in the concentration camps was that the Nazis could take pretty much everything from him. But the one thing they couldn't take was his freedom to choose how to respond. And his other key point was we need to be able to make meaning out of the suffering. And at the moment, we can't do that. So all I can do, I sometimes say to clients, print off a list of emotions from the internet, stick it on the fridge, and just get used to being in the present moment and saying to your partner, if you're alone, just checking in with yourself and saying, yeah, today I feel overwhelmed. today I feel whatever the emotion, today I'm happy and today I'm doing fine. But we just have to make sure that we're doing that along with all the other kind of self-care, you know, eating well and exercising. Because you're right, this we don't know where we are on this journey, and that's scary.
Isn't the danger that we're going to get just conditions into COVID-19, the way, for example, after 9/11, and the absolute horror that people felt about that atrocity, and we've had so many terrorist attacks since then, and now they, you know, it gets in the news for about a day, and then it's pushed to the back page, and everyone forgets about it. Is there not the danger that with COVID-19, that people are going to react in the same way? And the big danger is that, you know, it's an infection and it doesn't go away, and you're still just as likely to catch it, no matter what you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a danger, and. You know, there's two things. That's a danger. We get conditioned to it. The thing that, you know, going back to your other question just before, one of the things we have to recognize now is that the only certainty that we have is uncertainty. And so all of us are being challenged to be able to live with. And that's why I said it's this kind of collective grief of it's really hard to plan for the future. You know, these are really tough times, and that's why I said I think there's almost now this desire to we must just push on through. We get the bit of the, for those of us who are Brits, we get the kind of the stiff upper lip now. Come on, we've been through it, and we'll be okay. And but you know what? It may not be okay in that sense. We're living with something, and we've got to be able to learn to live with uncertainty. And the reality, as I sometimes say to clients, is the uncertainty was always there before. But what we did is we created rituals, and we have a structure, and we build our day in a way that makes us feel like we're in control. But actually, we never had that much control, and we don't have that much control over our lives. Someone said to me recently, and it just stayed with me, that when man is busy making plans, God is busy laughing.
There's nothing to fear but fear itself. Mm. We're out of time, Gavin. Thank you so much for coming in. If people would like a consultation, where should they go?
Thank you both for having me in. They should go to gavin@rivierawellbeing.com.
And I hope we can continue this conversation at a different time. Gavin, thanks a lot.